welcome to a special presentation of Everything Home, the transformational show where we talk about life, stuff, and balance, and showcase good people doing good business and good things. This is our signature segment, The Massey Memo, with our expert contributor, Robert Massey, attorney, solution provider, and protector of the people at Massey and Massey Attorneys at Law. Robert delivers The Massey Memo on the first and third Fridays of every month. His engaging and entertaining personality gives the boring law just the jolt it needs to make you want to tune in and learn to better play the hand you've been dealt in this game we call life. Enjoy the show. Everything Home, the transformational show where we talk about life, stuff, and balance. We're a resource and community that shares stories, lets passions be heard, and showcases good people doing good business and good things. We've created a platform where you can do something to change your life or the life of another person, where thoughts, passions, and emotions are given an action that actually becomes a reality and makes a difference. It's a place where the community can learn from and support its own members. We deliver authenticity, celebrate heroes, and bring together a like-minded audience. The mission of our movement? Enhance the quality of your life. All of our guests and experts' information and their shows are listed on our website, everythinghometalkshow.com. We encourage you to check it out and begin to use it as a resource to meet, hire, and learn from good people doing good business and good things. Just click anywhere on their banners and enjoy the show. You can also listen and subscribe to Everything Home on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM, and Blog Talk Radio. We're making it very easy and convenient for you to listen to us and enhance the quality of your life. And remember to like and follow Everything Home on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. This is our expert contributor segment, The Massey Memo with Robert Massey, our attorney solution provider and protector of the people at Massey and Massey Attorneys at Law. Robert will be delivering The Massey Memo on the first and third Fridays of every month. Today's topic, legal lightning round, important common issues, and how to deal with them. First, my joke, then on with the show. And in honor of Robert, even though he doesn't like attorney jokes, I'm throwing in an attorney joke. But it's not really insulting all attorneys, just the ones that I think deserve it. So, what do you call a lawyer with an IQ of 100? Your Honor. What do you call a lawyer with an IQ of 50? Senator. Hey! See, it wasn't really directed at you as an attorney.
Well, in law school, you hear very similar things, like, if you see an A student, they're most likely going to be a judge. If you have a C student, they're most likely going to be a politician. So that's definitely something that you hear as soon as you get into law school.
All right, so it is true. So the joke parallels real life. That makes total sense.
It absolutely does.
How are you today, my friend?
I am doing well. How are you?
I am good. It's been very interesting and busy. We've been doing a lot of outreach, and the responses that we have received from our capitalism show that we did on the 17th still just blowing my mind. The comments, the emails, the likes, the follows, it's been just amazing. So congratulations for delivering a fabulous show. And then Monday, which was Memorial Day, maybe because people had off, we had our most downloads ever that at least I can track. I think we're making some headway. People like the show. They like you. I guess they like me. And we're moving and grooving. So it's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And thank all the listeners for the support. Yeah, it's been great. And the feedback online and the feedback I've gotten from people in person that come in to the office and tell me that they've listened to the show and have enjoyed it has been great. So I appreciate the opportunity and the platform and all the listeners. I greatly appreciate the downloads and listens, and I'm glad to see that the information is helping people and the goal is being met to some degree, and certainly we have still a long way to go, but the legacy that I'm trying to carry on with my dad and what he did for so many years and providing people good, easy to understand legal information is continuing, and at the same time it's enjoyable doing the show with you, obviously, and fun, and hopefully entertaining as well as providing good information. So thank you and thank all the listeners, and excited about today's show. I think it will be a little bit different from what we've done in the other episodes, but I'll definitely along the same lines and go into some areas that I don't necessarily practice in, because some of them have to do with some criminal areas of the law, which I don't practice in, but certainly have the information. And so I think the questions that have been put together are certainly things that people ask about on a very regular basis. So I think it'll be a lot of good information for people, and people information that people are looking for. I think the questions that will be discussed are ones, if you looked at the top-rated legal Google searches, I'm sure they're all pretty high up on the list.
And the interesting part of this is we're changing up this format of the show a little bit, but the topics, I didn't have to Google anything. I'm technically getting free legal advice through this show, right? So basically I have all the ears of questions, and then I said, you know what? If we just make a show topic off of it, then I don't have to pay. So I said, wait a second, this is a good strategy I have. So questions, I wanted to come up with the questions, and it was so easy that the list that I had set you was much longer. You had to cut them down because you said, so A, we don't have that much time, and B, some of these things we shouldn't discuss on the air. I said, I know, but I need to have the answer because it happened in the past, and I would like to have known what I should have done. So you're like, no, let's just stick to these five, and then we'll take it from there. But a lot of the times, the things that come through my head is just because I personally experienced it, and I don't necessarily want someone to have to go through what I went through. That's part of how I think our show is a little bit more engaging and transparent and authentic, is that at least we're sharing some dirty laundry so other people can avoid some of the potholes in life, you know, for sure.
Absolutely.
Let's do this. Basically, what we're doing is a legal lightning round. I have five different topics. I'm going to ask the question of Robert. We're going to engage. He's going to give opinion. He's also going to give the legal part. I'm not sure what's going to come out of my mouth or what I'm going to share based on my experience with all of these categories. So we'll just play that by ear. All right. On with the legal lightning round, important common issues and how to deal with them. This is one of my favorite ones. The first one, a process server. What do you say when he asks, are you Michelle Swinnick? And he's standing there with an envelope.
You say, yes, I am. Thank you very much. Because here's the deal. If someone's trying to sue you and you have papers being served on you, it's required. So when you file a lawsuit, you have to serve it upon the person that you're suing. There's different ways of effectuating personal service. If you refuse that document, they're going to get it served one way or another, because if they show an effort to personally serve it to you, and they're able to show that you are avoiding taking service of that document, they can then submit that to the court, and they can serve you by alternative means. Alternative means could be certified mail, or it can be by publication. They can publish it in the, like here in Nevada, the Nevada Legal News for four straight weeks. And it's a notice saying this person is suing Michelle Swinnick, and this is the case number. And once that's in Nevada Legal News for four consecutive weeks, you have been served at that point. And then they submit that to the court, and the lawsuit can begin. And if the other side's able to submit something to the court that shows that you were avoiding service, you're starting off the bat not in the best eyes in the eyes of the court. They've already seen, oh, you're trying to avoid this. It's unnecessary. They're going to get you served one way or another. Obviously, if a process server comes, it's not always a lawsuit that's being served. It can be papers for you to execute. And a lot of times, there's a time-sensitive matter to whatever's trying to be served to you. So if you do say, oh, that's not me, or, you know, avoid it in some way, I just had a case. We were trying to get somebody served, and the gentleman was literally hiding in my client in this business. My client still had access to the camera system in the business, and he's on the phone with me telling me while my server's trying to get to him, I see the guy in the building. He's hiding in the back. So, I mean, people go to extreme lengths, and it's really unnecessary. You're going to get served one way or another. So if somebody comes to you and says, hey, are you so-and-so, and you know they're trying to serve you, honestly, the easiest way to go about it is just say, yes, that's me. Take the documents, sign for them, and move on with it. Because again, you're gonna get served one way or another. It's going to happen. So just get it started.
And they physically don't have to give you the documents. Let's just say they come to your house and they know you're inside, but you're hiding like your guy was he was hiding in the back. They could leave it at the door and it counts as being served, right?
No, they can't just leave it there. They can effectuate service at your – this is in Nevada – at your dwelling if they leave it with a person over the age of 18. So if there's a person at your house – it has to be a dwelling. You can't do that at a business. But to serve a business, there's different ways that you have to go about service. It's a little bit different than an individual. So they can't just leave it there and say you've been served. They have to, at least for personal service, they have to at least give it to an individual, but it does not have to be you individually if you're at a dwelling, like your home. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they can't just leave it.
My question is, and I'll give you my quick scenario on what happened with me, because it was scary, okay? This was scary, and I didn't know what to say, so I figured maybe if somebody just has a quick comeback where they know in their mind what the response should be. A past employer that I had was getting sued by a past employee, and the attorney for that employee wanted me to give some sort of, you know, like a testimony, because they want to ask me questions, mm-hmm. even though I had no interaction with this person at work. So there was really nothing that I could do. Like, I wasn't their boss. I wasn't even their coworker in a department. So there was nothing I could offer. And I just wanted to stay out of it because I didn't even want to get involved. So I'm at work.
So they were trying to subpoena you.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So subpoena me. Yes. Because they wanted me to talk to them. And I talked to him on the phone and I said, I don't have anything to offer you guys. We didn't do anything at work together. Like, the only times that we had a conversation was socially in the, you know, getting a coffee together. Other than that, there's nothing. So I don't want to be a part of this. Keep me out of it. And it had to do with the NLRB. And it was, the whole thing was just, it was all shady. So I didn't even want to be a part of it. And I didn't even work there. So I'm at another job and I come back from lunch and there's this guy sitting in this chair, and there was nothing friendly about him. He just jumps up in my face and says, are you Michelle Swinnick? And I had no idea like who this person was, total random stranger. I'm not quite sure what came out of my mouth, but I might have said like, who are you, or what do you want, or whatever. So then all of a sudden he's like, well, I know it's you. I've seen your picture. I'm like, what? I didn't even know what was going on. Right. So, I mean, I was totally mm-hmm. caught off guard. And he goes, are you Michelle Swinnick? And I paused. I said something, and I didn't use any foul language, because at this point I'm literally shaky, because I'm like, I don't understand what's
going
on.
Yeah, of course.
I don't know who this guy is. I mean, it could be like a serial killer. I have no idea, or a stalker. I mean, I had those in the past. So I'm like, oh God, now the stalker is at my house, or he's at my work.
Yeah.
And then I said something. He goes, well, and then he pulls out some badge, which, you know, you can get that at a toy store. So how do I know that's even real? And he says, well, I'm an officer of the court and I'm going to arrest you right now. And I was like, I don't even know what's going on. Meanwhile, it's not like I have any clout at even my old job that, you know, I'm just a little peon. So it's not like they're taking down the CEO of the company. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So then mm-hmm. I just, at this point, I'm kind of in shock. And then he looked at me, and then there was somebody else there. And I think that's what calmed him down for a second. And he just handed me the package. And then I didn't know what to do. I was like, this is insane. So, I mean, if somebody approaches you like that in that scenario, I mean, how do you know who it even is? Like, why should I have to identify myself to some stranger when he just asks me who I am? I mean, I really wanted to go tell him to F off, but I didn't want to, you know what I mean? Because I didn't see this coming, and it wasn't like I did anything wrong. So, but then when he threatened to arrest me, I was like, what the, you know what I mean? I didn't even know if he can
absolutely.
Do that.
I mean, these process servers, a lot of them can be very aggressive. and very unprofessional. And it is scary. It absolutely can be scary if the person is handling it the incorrect way. So I'm in no way saying if this person aggressively comes up to you, just immediately tell them who you are. No. I mean, you need to have them identify themselves, tell them what exactly that they're doing there, what the purpose is, what are these documents and related to, why do you need to know who I am? You can certainly ask all those pre-qualifying questions. And if the guy's being very aggressive like that and very unprofessional, you can certainly say, look, I'm not comfortable with this whatsoever, and walk away. And if that's the case, it's certainly not you trying to evade service. It's this person just handling the situation very poorly. Now, they can't arrest you for refusing service. The constable's office or the sheriff's office can be hired to effectuate personal service on someone. But refusing.
Yeah, he was a sheriff person. I think that's what it was. He was in that. He threw that out there with his little stupid badge. Yeah.
So there's companies that just do that are process servers, but then you can also use the constable's office or the sheriff's office to do it. But they have no right to arrest you if you refuse service whatsoever. So that's not a concern at all. But I completely see what you're saying there. I mean, if that situation happens, I would just tell people to say, qualify yourselves. Who are you? What's your purpose here? Why do you need to know who I am? And get to it that way so you make sure that you're not just giving some random stranger your information who's maybe trying to say that they're a process server but has a lot more evil intentions, so to speak. So, you know, I think that's certainly a way to handle it. But if they are being that way, again, refusing to deal with them in a situation like that is certainly explainable. In your situation, it seems like you're a non-party to a lawsuit. So if you're a non-party to a lawsuit, you have no obligation to be involved in any way or offer yourself up for a deposition or anything of that kind. The only way they can get you is to issue a subpoena. And if they issue you a subpoena, then at that point you do have to appear, or you can be held in contempt of court. The court can fine you, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that goes a little bit off topic of just service, but that seems to be what happened in your case. And I understand what you're saying. You didn't want to be involved whatsoever. But once they issue get a subpoena issued for you, you do have to appear at that point. But, you know, I think the way to handle anything, and especially, I mean, even if they come to your home, is some random person coming to your home can also be like, what's going on here? This is very odd. You certainly are well within your rights to obviously say, who are you? What's your purpose here? What's going on? And if they're not willing to answer those questions, you just closing the door or walking away from them is certainly acceptable. There's no issue with that. But again, if they're approaching you in a professional manner and say, I'm here to serve you these documents, I'm a process server, et cetera, there's no reason to try and evade that or say, no, I'm not that person. Because again, it makes the process more difficult, but there are a lot of process servers that can be very unprofessional, very aggressive. So I understand completely that situation can be uncomfortable, but again, you're well within your rights to say, I'm not comfortable with this, and walk away.
All right, well, that's good for the next time. Hopefully there isn't a next time, but I feel a bit more prepared because I was completely caught off guard. And actually what I did afterwards is I called the other side's attorney and I said, if you guys don't stop harassing me, especially with the person you just sent over here, then I'm going to contact an attorney and do something against you guys. And they left me alone and the whole thing disappeared. Somehow that all worked out in my favor, so I didn't have to deal with it. But talking me out crazy. Yeah, I got ambushed and attacked. I mean, yikes.
Yeah.
So, all right, now we know how to handle process servers in both friendly and unfriendly approaches. So that is good. That is good. And here's one you can go into a lot of detail, but we'll keep it not necessarily bare minimum, but the critical stuff, because I have a feeling that you don't really have a lot of rights when this happens. We're going to talk about DUIs and DWIs. And here in Arizona, it is so strict. I'm sure Nevada is similar, but Arizona is one of the most difficult states and strictest states when it comes to everything. There is literally no tolerance. So let's just say, for example, you have two or three drinks. It's just normal happy hour. You're in complete control, but you know that if you do blow, you'll go over the limit on a breathalyzer. And you're driving home, the red and blue lights, and it's not late. It's not like 2 a.m. It's just like a normal time. The red and blue lights are in the rearview mirror, and you get pulled over. What is the first thing that you should do?
I mean, always be hands on the steering wheel. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Very cordial with the officer, because doing anything else is only going to make the situation worse, number one. Number two, at least Nevada, and I know a lot of states are like this, but Nevada is an implied consent state. What that means is Nevada is giving you the privilege to drive by issuing you a driver's license. Because they're issuing you a driver's license and giving you the privilege to drive, driving is not a right, it's a privilege. You have given implied consent that if you are pulled over, that you will submit to a breathalyzer. So what that means is if you refuse to take a breathalyzer, at that point the officer can revoke your right to drive and put you under arrest because you've consented to this, you've impliedly consented to this, and now you are refusing to do it, so therefore they can revoke your ability to drive and take you under arrest. Now, if you had two or three drinks and you feel you would be right around the limit or possibly right over the limit, refusing the initial breathalyzer, while it might put you under arrest, they're eventually going to test you in some manner, whether it's a breathalyzer, whether it's a blood test, whether, you know, whatever it might be. But if you are taken under arrest and maybe don't get breathalyzed for another couple of hours, that may change the results of the breathalyzer. So it could be something strategic there. I'm certainly not encouraging anyone to do that. But, you know, that could change the results of the breathalyzer, where maybe if you were going to draw, you know, here in Nevada, it's 0.08. If you were going to blow a 0.08, maybe in an hour or two, you would only blow 0.06. It's very difficult for them to prove that you would have blown a 0.08 at the time you were driving. There was something in the news 3 or 4 months ago, I think it was in Arizona actually, where an attorney, he got in this crazy road rage thing, and he was drunk while he was driving, and he had a bottle of vodka in the car with him, and it was on camera that right when he got pulled over, but before he had been breathalyzed, he took a giant chug of the vodka. And everybody looked at this video. Yeah, everybody looked at this video and was like, what is this guy doing? He's crazy. He's just drinking right in front of the cop. But because he knew he was being videotaped and he did that, now all of a sudden he can say, well, I wasn't drunk while I was driving. The only reason I blew what I did on the breathalyzer is because I took this drink after the fact, and I wasn't driving at that point. So,
he's going to use that as his defense.
So, yeah, that's what he's going to try and use as his defense. Again, I'm not suggesting that in any sense whatsoever, but people do some crazy stuff to, you know, try and get out of it, obviously, and try something. But at the end of the day, you can absolutely refuse a breathalyzer. You can refuse field testing. You can say, no, I'm not going to do that. If you do that, they are going to arrest you right then and there. There is no doubt about it that they're going to do that. So at the point that you're in that situation, it really becomes a judgment call on your part.
When you're lacking judgment all evening.
Exactly. Right? If you're able to even make that decision, you know, right, at the time to say, okay, should I submit to this or should I just, you know, take the chance and get arrested? I mean, at the end of the day, being cooperative with them and going through the field testing is probably, if you don't want to get arrested and have your license revoked and go through that whole process, it's probably, you know, a good way to handle it. But there's definitely criminal attorneys that I've talked to that tell their clients, refuse it every time, no matter what, refuse the breathalyzer test, refuse the sobriety test, because once they have those results, then it's done. You can't, it's difficult to get around it at that point. If you refuse it and then they have to go through the steps and take you in, there's a better chance of a defense at that point, because they can still breathalyze you at some point once they take you under arrest. But to get like a blood test from you, they have to get a warrant to do that. So once they get you at the police station, they can't just start running blood and doing that. They have to get a warrant from a judge to take a blood test from you. So it's a difficult thing to know the right thing to do. I completely understand that. You know, obviously the best thing to do is if there's so many options nowadays. You got Uber, you got Lyft, you got taxi.
Uber is the path of least resistance. Yeah, just go on the Uber.
You know, just if you've had a drink or if you've had any amount of alcohol in you and you think there's any chance that you're impaired, just get an Uber. Have a friend pick you up. Go get your car the next day. I mean, that's really the best way to handle it. But I understand when you get pulled over, it's scary. You're already, if you have had a few drinks, you're under the influence. You're maybe not thinking accurately. But the refusing of the breathalyzer is going to result immediately in you being arrested. So you just have to know that up front and then make the decision from there as to how you want to handle it. Again, you know, there's a lot of criminal attorneys I've talked to that say refuse it every time. No matter what, be cooperative with the officer. Don't be argumentative. They're just doing their jobs. And you being argumentative and not being cooperative with the officer is only going to make the matter much, much worse. So that certainly would be my number one tip, is no matter what, be cooperative. If you're willing to take the chance and be arrested and going through all that, that's really going to have to be your choice. But as long as you know, a lot of states are implied consent states, that you've kind of made this agreement with the state that they're going to allow you to drive. And so you have to let them test you if you get pulled over and you're suspected of driving under the influence. So there is a consequence if you say, no, I'm not comfortable doing that. And as long as you're okay with that consequence, then, hey, you just have to know up front what's going to happen.
Here in Arizona, if you refuse, you automatically lose your driver's license. But if you do blow and you go over the limit, they're going to throw you in the back of the car anyway, and you're going to lose your license.
What they certainly can't do automatically, unless there's probable cause of there being something, you know, drugs in the car or whatever it might be, is they can't just automatically search your entire car. And you have to be careful to not give the officer consent to search your car, because they'll say, hey, can we search your car? And you might not be thinking, or think, hey, they're going to do it anyways, so I'm just going to say yes. They don't. There needs to be some probable cause there for them to search your car. So make sure that you don't unknowingly give them consent to do so. But yeah, you're going to end up in the same place if you know you're going to blow over the limit. So refusing, again, certainly could be a strategic choice.
Like you mentioned, just take the Uber. It's a hell of a lot cheaper. Hopefully that helps. And it is a public service announcement from the Department of Transportation in the state of Arizona.
Exactly.
As they have on the, I don't know if they do this for you guys, they put up these electronic billboards over the freeways where they get to put messages, you know, and they'll be like,
yeah,
drive drunk, get nailed, or drive hammered, get nailed. And every once in a while they'll have a funny one, but yeah. So that's what we spend our money on here, is big signs like that.
There you go.
Hey, you know, we got it going on. This is a very smart state, very smart state. All right. Number three, this one should be interesting. So you have an altercation with a stranger in public. One situation where it's verbal and one where it's physical. So So let's just say somebody gets in your personal space and starts yelling at you. And even though you try to walk away, they keep going on and follow you. Now what do you do?
There's always the idea of self-defense, and you certainly don't have to sit there and allow someone to verbally or physically, you know, abuse you. Now, when you're looking at it legally, assault has nothing to do with, it doesn't require, I should say, a physical touching. Someone does not have to physically touch you to be liable for assault. Battery requires a physical touching. Okay, so if someone is in your space, is violating your space, and is cursing at you and making you feel uncomfortable, right there could be enough to make them liable. I'm talking civilly now, for assault. And I believe the criminal standard is the same, that a touching is not required for assault. It, battery, there has to be a physical touching. So if someone is in your space and won't leave you alone, I mean, it depends on where you are. If you're in a dark alley and this person won't leave you alone, obviously you either have to defend yourself or run to a place where you feel safe. If you're in some type of establishment, whether it be a casino or waking up, I say casino because that happens here. You get people that are drunk late at night. They bump into somebody, and all of a sudden this ensues. You go to security, you let people know what's going on and handle it in that sense. But if you can avoid any type of touching, hitting, anything, you certainly want to, because even if this person is in your face swearing at you, if you then punch them, they can still come and sue you for battery. And there might be some mitigating circumstances, but then it's on you to have to go and prove that. Well, this person was in my face. I felt like my physical, I felt like I was under threat, and I was doing this for my own defense. That certainly can be a completely valid argument, but it's then incumbent upon you to prove that. So how are you going to prove it? Was there videotape evidence? Was there any other independent witnesses there that would corroborate what you said? Because if not, then it's your word against theirs. And I promise you that's difficult. So if you can avoid the situation without getting involved in a physical altercation, if they haven't initiated it, I would certainly recommend doing that. If they initiate a physical altercation first, then certainly go ahead and, you know, defend yourself, because they hit first, you were defending yourself. Again, if there's no independent witnesses, no videotape evidence, it's still going to be your word against theirs, but you certainly can't sit there and let somebody just beat on you because you're worried about a lawsuit or something like that. You have to defend yourself. So I completely understand that. But if you can get out of the situation somehow without it becoming physical, certainly that's the best way to do it. There's situations where that can't happen, and that, you know, that happens. But you need to be weary of it. If something like that does happen and there are people around, certainly once whatever is happening ends, try and make sure that you get people's information that would corroborate what occurred, so you at least, it's not just your word against theirs. If you're able to at the time, obviously if it becomes physical, you're not going to be thinking about that. But you want to try and get out of it without it becoming physical. But if it does, and if they become physical with you, obviously you call the police, and there would be a criminal side, and then you could also go after them civilly for, you know, there's assault and battery. There's criminal charges for assault and battery, but then there's also civil charges for assault and battery. The only thing that's different really is the burden of proof, criminally compared to civilly. And civilly, obviously, you're going after money damages, where the criminal charges are, you know, the law enforcement and possibly jail time or probation, whatever it might be. So that would kind of be the best way to handle it. Try and get out of it the best you can. If you can't, defend yourself. And if it does become something, try and get people's information that witnessed it. If you're in a facility where you think there was video cameras, you know, that's good as well if you get into the legal process. And if you retain an attorney, make sure you give them that information that, hey, I was here and I'm pretty sure they have cameras there. That will trigger your attorney to contact that establishment, whatever it might be, and try and get those videotapes, because a picture is worth a thousand words, obviously, and it makes the process much easier. And it doesn't, it's not just your word against theirs.
So even if they tap your shoulder to like get your attention, and obviously it's not just saying, hey, how are you today? No, or pass the ketchup. No, it wasn't that. I mean, there's obviously the guy's doing something or the girl's doing something, and then that counts at a different level where now it could be battery because they actually touched you, as opposed to just yelling at your face.
Battery has to be a physical touching that caused harm. A tap on the shoulder obviously isn't going to physically harm you, so that would be more of an assault than a battery.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, so that would be enough potentially to prove an assault. Once it comes down, you get into court, you're going to have to show the harm it caused and all those types of things. But an assault does not, when you hear the word assault, it makes you think like, oh, that's somebody just beat the hell out of somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
No, an assault does not require any type of physical touching. And it covers more of that if someone taps your shoulder and makes any type of touches you in any sense that you don't want, that can be considered an assault, where a battery, there needs to be some damage done to you.
It makes total sense now, because I was just thinking that if somebody starts to, you know, wherever this may be, and the reason why it came to mind is these kids sporting events nowadays, these parents are nuts. They're crazy. They're out of control. They get in altercations. They're rolling around on the ground together because, you know, little Johnny didn't get to play second base. I mean, stupid stuff. So you see it on, you know, the news or in the viral videos and stuff all the time. So and so hopefully most people aren't in those situations. But if something does happen, that's why I thought it would be important to differentiate between, you know, what are you supposed to do when somebody's in your face and you didn't even do anything, you know, because they could just be having a bad day or whatever. So do what you can not to have any physical touching. But if they do engage first, you have every right to defend yourself as best you can. Let's just say,
yeah,
but at some point, if the person's down and you don't have to keep hitting them with whatever you're hitting them, you might want to stop and then not go too far, because as long as
you're not
at harm's way, because at the end of the day, it sounds like you still have to justify why all this happened. Even though you didn't instigate it, you tried to avoid it, you're still going to have to defend yourself.
Yes.
And it's not a lay down. Even if it's on videotape, it's not even a lay down. All right, you're completely innocent, but this, because the other person can always go after you for physical injury, even that. So that's a whole other layer of stuff that could go on, especially if you have something to lose. Like if they knew you had money, and that's the reason that they're doing it.
And that's exactly right. And if you're in if someone has instigated an altercation like that with you, you can guarantee most likely that they're the type of person that is going to take any opportunity to file some type of lawsuit against you civilly and try and get some type of money damages out of you. So you need to know that in the back of your head, and you don't want to give them any excuse or any avenue to allow them to take that path, because if they have it, they're going to. And there's people in this world, unfortunately, that look for that. They want you to hit them because they know, I'm going to sue you. And maybe it was justified, but you initiated that contact and you broke the guy's nose. And now all of a sudden you have to come out of pocket $100,000. And it's just because this guy was being an idiot and got in your face. You know, those are the consequences that you have to really think about.
You bring up a good point. The person that instigates any type of this extreme verbal or physical altercation, they're not playing with a full deck of cards. I mean, even when people are intoxicated, if they go to this extreme, they're not a good drunk, you know? So there's obviously something else when they're on their normal 9-to-5 day. They're not somebody that you'd really want to be friends with anyway. So there is baggage coming along with this person that you've unfortunately interacted with. So those you need to be a little bit more aware that it's not just a, hey, you know, sorry, we bumped each other in the hallway type thing.
Exactly.
All right. Very interesting. Hopefully nobody has to deal with that, but you never know in today's world. I tell you, it's kind of crazy. Number four, this one's right up your alley. Briefly went over some of this stuff when we were talking about homeowners insurance. So let's just say you have an accident in your home with a person or a child that you do know. Two scenarios, one where there's an ambulance involved and one where it's a little bit less serious of an incident where somebody just got a sprained ankle and, you know, they did the home remedy, put the ice on it. Let's go with the ambulance first, and then I'll give why I brought up the lesser version. I mean, not like life or death, but something enough where somebody had to go to the hospital.
I mean, it kind of depends on how it occurred. If there is some type of known danger in your home that you should have put these people on notice of or repaired in some manner, for example, if you have something in your backyard, I don't know, you have some type of structure and it's held down into the ground with like a spike that's sticking out of the ground, and you know the kids are going to be outside playing, you need to either take measures to warn them, the people that are in your home, about it, repair it in some way, keep people away from that area, make sure no one can get harmed by it, something like that. You could certainly, and say a child fell on it and hurt themselves and a spike went through their leg or something like that, you can certainly be held liable for that. It was a known danger to you that you should have done something to fix it or put them on notice of this danger that was present to allow them to protect against it. Now, if you have friends over and they bring their kids and the kid's running around and he trips over his feet and falls down and breaks his nose, they could try, but there's really no liability there. The kid just tripped and had an accident. He didn't trip over a floorboard that you had sticking out of the ground that should have been fixed, and that's what caused him to break his nose. He tripped over his feet and he broke his nose. So a lot of it has to do with what caused the injury, what were the facts surrounding the injury occurring, before we would know exactly what the level of your liability would be. I can certainly tell you, for example, my kids just finished school for the year. My wife rented this giant water slide for our backyard. The thing was, and it was as big as my house. And they invited all of my kids' friends over to come and play on this slide. This slide, it was a water slide. It was extremely steep. And I mean, this thing, once you went down it and you got kids on there that are 40, 50 pounds, these kids were flying down this slide. And I,
you freaked
being
out.
The lawyer that I am, I wrote up a waiver of liability and I pasted it to the side of this slide.
Oh, that's awesome.
If you, yeah, I wasn't taking any chances.
Oh, it's not fun to go to parties at your house for sure.
No, not at all.
Everybody's got to sign something. They probably do an inventory. They have to get some sort of a body check before they come in the door. Oh, my God.
Exactly. But I put it on here. I put it on there and said, hey, if you let your kid use this slide, you are consenting to the fact that this thing, that they could potentially be injured on it, and I'm not liable for that. Because if they could see, if their kid went down that slide and flew off the slide and into my rocks and broke their leg or something, they could certainly try and come and sue me and say, hey, you had this on your property, my kid used it, you never told me there was any type of dangers about it, and my kid broke his leg on it. And they could try and sue me, and they would probably win. So it really comes down to kind of known dangers versus unknown dangers and how the injury occurred. That's going to depend on the potential for liability. Again, the good and bad part about our court system is anybody can sue anybody else for anything. So it certainly, you're not, if your kid trips over his feet, breaks his nose, there's nothing stopping that person from suing you. They can try, but it'll be much more difficult because it was just a common accident. You did nothing to cause that or make it happen. But if you're having people in your home, if you have people that you've invited into the home, and there's a lot of levels to this that would take a lot longer than a lightning round to go through, and we can do it in another episode and go through all the different type of people that come onto your property, you know, workers, independent contractors, invited guests, uninvited guests, people that are trespassing, things like that, to show the different levels of liability and when you could be liable and when you couldn't be liable, et cetera, because there's a lot of detail here that we could go into. But just kind of on the general surface, a lot of it comes down to how they were injured and what occurred. And there isn't a lot of differentiation between whether the injury requires an ambulance or whether it's just a sprained ankle that you put some ice on it and go home. The level of liability really comes down to how the injury occurred. Now, obviously, the level of damages will change, because if an injury requires an ambulance, you're going to have a lot more medical bills. You're going to have a lot more treatment compared to a sprained ankle that might heal in 2 days and they don't have to go see a doctor and they just have to put ice on it. That there's not a lot of medical damages there, not a lot of money damages really to go after. That's really where the differentiation comes in, is in the amount of damages. But in the sense of the liability, it doesn't really change based on the severity of the injury. That just changes the amount of damages. Again, if anything like this happens, the first thing you want to do, and if someone's going to sue you for it, the first thing you want to do is check your homeowner's insurance. See what's covered under your homeowner's insurance. See if there's a defense allowed under your homeowner's insurance, that they'll retain an attorney for you and pay for an attorney for you if something like that happens, and what your policy allows for injuries that occurred in your home, and what, you know, the amount under your policy that they'll pay out. It's just like an auto policy. You have a $50,000 auto policy. Those are the policy limits, and that's what the people can get under that policy unless they go and sue you. It would be the same under a homeowner's insurance, that there's going to be a policy limit of what your policy is going to pay out for any injuries that occurred in your home if that's covered under your policy. So if an injury occurs in your home, definitely the first call should be to your homeowner's insurance to discuss what happened and what the coverage is.
And the reason why I brought up the ambulance versus the less serious incident was to try to just get an understanding of, if an ambulance is called, then, you know, it's, let's just say it's something major where there was, if everyone acknowledged at that time that the injury was substantial enough that it needed serious medical attention, whether it was a head or it was a broken arm or something. So then you knew that it was already, boom, established that there's a problem. So you figured there was going to be some sort of medical, some sort of insurance issues, something. But then on the other side, this happened years ago at a friend of mine's house, somebody sprained their ankle. And they said, no, it's fine. I'll just put ice on it. It's good to go. Well, a couple days later, didn't get any better. They went, it found out, they took the x-rays. It turned into a broken foot. It required surgery. They didn't sue. But I was thinking, well, then what if that person now wants to sue you for the cost, the lost time of work, pain and suffering, something or other, because the incident did happen at the home, but it was almost delayed because it was, oh, no, it's not a big deal. Don't worry about it. So that doesn't necessarily matter, because if it's something that they can prove happened there, it matters not when the injury was acknowledged. It matters on, was it a known danger or an unknown danger? That's the key.
Yeah, and knowing, you know, in what you just said and the delay and then getting the, finding out the broken foot and that situation, that's going to come into play when you're evaluating the damages and through the process of trying to settle any type of insurance claim or lawsuit or something like that. And, you know, that just becomes a problem with the proof and, you know, trying to relate the incident that occurred to the injury that occurred and et cetera. But the level of liability is more about how the injury occurred rather than the actual injury that occurred.
Totally makes sense. That kind of changes everything. So hopefully that enlightens some people as to their responsibility. Something is going to happen. It's just a numbers game. You know, bodies in the house, in all different age brackets, events, whatever. Something is going to happen.
And people need to be aware of this as well when they're selling their home. If you're selling, you're still the owner of that home. So if you have an open house in your home and an injury occurred, you are liable for that. So you need to be aware of that. It's not like, oh, I'm selling my home. Like, this is, you know, an open house. People are coming in to see. My hands are clean. I wasn't there. No. If you're the owner of that home and there's you have people that you've essentially invited in to look at the home, if an injury would occur with, in some manner, again, obviously, it's caused by the condition of your premises, then you could be liable for that. So definitely be aware of that if you're in the process of selling your home or if you have, you know, the interesting conversation comes in. And again, this is very detailed and we'll have to do it in another episode. But the interesting conversation comes in is what your level of liability is on a home or a piece of property that you own but is not occupied in any way. It's just a vacant home or a vacant piece of property, but you're the owner of it. The level, and then you have possibly people that trespass onto it, and your level of liability in that situation, that's an interesting conversation that I think people would be pretty surprised about. So that's definitely something that we'll do on another episode.
It's like a good old-fashioned squatter. You know, that's when all these homes were going in foreclosure. People were just living in the vacant homes all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
We can have a squatter episode. Talk a little bit about the liability of when they just kind of show up.
Yeah, absolutely. It happens a lot if you have a condition on your property that would attract children to come on and trespass onto your property, something that you know would attract like a child to want to come onto your property and your level of liability, it's pretty interesting. So, yeah, we'll definitely have to talk about that in another episode.
You have to keep in mind that all of the things that you own are at risk. So you might think, oh, well, it's just that house if something happens. No. All of the things you own are affected when they're suing or whatever the situation may be, correct? So, I mean, you're vulnerable all over the place.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, it depends on the situation, how you own certain pieces of property or certain assets as to what's protected and what's not. Essentially, if you have assets, unless you've done certain things to protect those assets, they can get to them if they file a lawsuit and get a judgment against you.
Oh, crazy stuff. But like you said, this is what the world we live in now. So you just got to be aware. You got to know. All right.
Yep.
Well, the last one, which you said you have got an interesting way of dealing with this one. It's jury duty. So you get the summons in the mail and you throw it away. So, and there's no way to prove that you ever received it, right? So it's, I don't have to go. Right? Because
so
I don't want to go. I don't.
Technically, the answer to your question is no. There is no way the court can prove that you received that jury summons. If you take it and you throw it in the trash and you never call them, and that's that. I can tell you this, that 99% of the time, if you don't show up, you're just going to get another one in the mail. They could call you in for contempt of court because not showing up for jury duty is, there is a civil penalty to it.
Yeah, but I didn't get the thing in the mail. It didn't show. I didn't see it. I didn't. I thought it was junk mail. I didn't. You know, see what I mean?
And that's yeah. No, no. Absolutely. And you can certainly say
that.
That
doesn't work.
And it does
that
happen.
Doesn't work.
But let me give this spin on jury duty. And look, I get it. It's a pain. I've been called for lawyers aren't protected from jury duty. I've been called for jury duty. I've been chosen for a jury. It happened to actually just 2 years ago. I was on a jury for a criminal case, and I get it. It is a pain in the butt. It's aggravating. You got to figure out your schedule, especially if you have kids. It's a pain. You have work. You have to take off work. You got to go down there. You have to wait and wait and wait. I get it. It is a pain in the butt. I encourage people to think of the alternative, because if we didn't have that system, I'd be much more fearful. And so I really encourage people to not think of it as such of a giant pain in the butt, but more of, man, I'm happy that this system is in place, because it is a privilege that we live in a society where there's a system in place where you can get a jury of your peers to decide on whatever the legal issue is for you. And I can promise you that if you are one of the parties in the lawsuit, that you're going to want people on that jury that don't think of it as a giant pain in the ass, that aren't miserable about being there and want to do anything but be there, because you want them to be thinking clearly and logically and look at the full spectrum of what's going on and come to a reasonable decision. You don't want them to say, oh, yeah, no, I'm not giving that guy anything, or, yeah, that guy's guilty because I just want to get the hell out of here. You certainly aren't going to want that. So I encourage people that when they get called for jury duty and when they're down there, to think about it from the perspective of if you were the one involved in the lawsuit and how you would want the people on that jury to approach jury duty. Because I think that helps people kind of put it in perspective more and not have such a negative thought process about jury duty, because it's a privilege to have the system. And again, look, is it a pain in the butt? It absolutely is. It absolutely is. And the whole time you're sitting there, all you're thinking is, man, there's all these retired people that have nothing to do with their day that I'm sure would be happy to serve on a jury. Let them do it. I got crap to do. I got business to do. I got kids to take care of. I got all this other stuff to do. I don't have the time to be here. I get it. It is a giant pain in the butt. Can they prove that you ever got that jury summons? No, they can't. But they're probably going to send you another one anyways, and you're going to get called back down there again, because they get your, so you know, they get your information off of your bills. Most usually it's your energy and your utility bills. That's where they get your name and your information. So you're going to get called down, and try and go down there with an open mind. Now, look, the one thing I will tell you, don't go in there thinking you got the excuse of all excuses and you're going to show them something that they've never seen before and they're going to let you out of jury duty right away. Because I can assure you that every judge has heard every excuse excuse me, possible, and they've rejected every excuse possible. And I can also promise you that if you get up and you try to come up with some BS excuse about how you can't be there, I can promise you that all that does is put a flag on your head to say, okay, now I'm going to make sure this person stays here. You know, the best thing to do is, look, if you have a legitimate conflict, then say it. If you have non-refundable travel, then that will get you out of jury duty. You know, if you have a trip coming up the next week and it's non-refundable and you're going, then if you show them that, they'll excuse you from jury duty. But they're gonna ask you for proof of when you booked it. you're not going to be able to get the jury summoned, book a non-refundable trip and think that's going to be good.
While you're sitting in the seat to get called, you're booking a flight on Southwest. So, yeah,
exactly.
That's frowned upon.
I've seen it happen. I've seen it happen. Trust me, I clerked for a judge for you know, over a year. So I've seen every excuse possible from a group of jurors. And my wife's been picked for juries. You know, she talked about how she had kids and we didn't have any help at the time. And, you know, she couldn't do it. They didn't care about that. Look, everybody there is putting their schedule on hold to be there. To say, yeah, you know, I have this or I have that. Everybody there has this or that. Everybody there has other things going on, but they're there. So, honestly, the best way to approach it, unless you have a very legitimate, you know, if you have travel, if you have a situation going on where you have someone in the hospital or you're pregnant and you're about to give, for something like that, obviously speak that and hopefully a reasonable judge will say you're excused. But if you don't, if it's just, yeah, it's inconvenient because you have to take time off work, approach the process with a reasonable state of mind, with an open state of mind, and try and take it seriously, because it is serious and it is a privilege. It really, really is a privilege to have the process that we have and to be able, you know, we don't live in a dictatorship where you have a judge that says, okay, you're guilty 20 years. Okay, you're liable for $100 million. Get out of here. No, you get a group of your peers, hopefully, if your attorney's good at choosing a jury, and they make the decision. And again, if you're the one involved, you want those people to be reasonable, to be attentive, to not just be hating their lives because they're sitting there. And I know it's hard. It's a pain. But it is a privilege, and it's something that people shouldn't have such a negative thought about as soon as they see that jury summons. Like, oh, my God, this is terrible. My wife just got one in the mail, actually. She has to go to jury duty in, like, 2 weeks, and we got to change around all these plans. And, you know, it is what it is. But a lot of times you got to go down, and you end up not even getting chosen. So, you know, it might take up a half a day or a day. I really think that's worth it when you look at what the alternative would be. You know, I know it's certainly not what people want to hear. They want to hear a bashing of jury duty, just like everybody always does. But I encourage people to have a different point of view. And look at it from my perspective. I can never go down there and answer the questions in a manner that's going to help me get out of jury duty. Because as soon as they hear I'm a lawyer, if they ask me a question that says, hey, can you be fair and balanced in evaluating this case? If I would say no, the judge would look at me and say, what? You're an attorney. What do you mean you can't do that? So as soon as I get called down there, I'm stuck. I got to answer the questions in a very professional manner because, you know, I've been on the other side. And so I'm stuck down there. But it's a privilege, and people should try and look at it in a more reasonable manner.
That is a very optimistic and uplifting way of viewing jury duty, for sure. I never thought about it that way. And I appreciate your view, but I'm still going to be anti-jury duty. I'll keep throwing it in the garbage. So maybe one of these days when I have a little more free time, I'll come around. But I do appreciate your pro-capitalism, very pro-America approach to it. But for now, garbage. Bye-bye. Yeah. I'll let all the do-gooders take care of making sure for things I'm taken care of for now. But yeah.
Hey.
All right. Well, you know, we covered a lot of information. I think it was a little entertaining for people, which we tried to do too. Anything quick to summarize before we end the show today, my friend?
You know, just going back down the list, process server, have them identify yourself, be reasonable with it. If you're there and they're reasonable, just accept it, get it going. DUI. Know that you can refuse, but there are consequences if you do. Altercations with people, try and do it peacefully. If it doesn't go peacefully, try and get witnesses, video evidence, and know that if you're in that situation, someone started the altercation, that they're probably the type of person that's going to try and sue you. So just know that going into it. And with the home, again, we'll do another episode and elaborate that on that quite a bit, because there is a lot of different things that go into it. But if people are coming onto your property and there's some known dangers, make sure you either remedy them or make people aware of them. And then the jury duty, yeah, they can't prove if you got it, but I encourage people to take part.
So that was the only thing I got right today, was they can't prove that. Everything else, I got a big F.
And thank you, man. And thank all the listeners for the continued support. I hope you continue to enjoy, and we'll continue to provide you the best information we can.
Yeah, a huge thank you to all the listeners. We really appreciate the support, the interaction, just the fact that somebody takes the time to click a like button or actually make a comment. I admire them so much for actually taking time out of their day to do something like that. So very grateful, and I really appreciate the support. Robert and I are just excited about where this show is going and where we're taking it. So another wonderful episode of The Massey Memo. Swinnick and Massey out!
Another great episode with my good friend, Robert Massey. Robert will be delivering The Massey Memo on the first and third Fridays of every month. All of our guests and experts' information and their shows are listed on our website, everythinghometalkshow.com. We encourage you to check it out and begin to use it as a resource to meet, hire, and learn from good people doing good business and good things. Just click anywhere on their banners and enjoy the show. You can also listen and subscribe to Everything Home on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM, and Blog Talk Radio. We're making it very easy and convenient for you to listen to us and enhance the quality of your life. And remember to like and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And feel free to send us an email or message on which topics you want to hear about and which guests you want to learn from. I appreciate you listening. Make it a great day, everybody.